And we are live. Gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Mecca of Banter podcast. I am this week's host, Henry Wind. You can find me on Twitter at Henry Wind. It's kind of crazy, but season two is coming to a close. We've gone through, 32 episodes at this point? This is episode 32.
Close to it.
Yeah, we have like two game weeks left for some of our teams, only one game week left for other of our teams. Kind of crazy that it's coming to an end. What a great season it's been. But let's get a quick check in with the fellas here. Lucas Winkleman, how are you doing, bro?
What's up, boys? I'm good. It's Monday. Played a little FIFA earlier. It is what it is. Happy to be here.
Oh, after my. Arsenal
heartbroken on the inside, but choosing to be happy because I get to spend the next hour and a half chatting footy with you guys.
You sound like you lost your dog or something, man.
Yeah, you do.
It's the saddest intro I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Did you expect a super?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know
what better than if you were me.
Yeah. I mean. Well, welcome to the pod, nevertheless, Lucas Winkleman. Connor Sindobri, what's up, dog?
What's going on, fellas? Happy to be here.
I'm kind of ready for the season to be over, to be honest with you. It kind of stresses me the fuck out that United hasn't sort of wrapped this up yet, and I have to think about it every single day. But we're coming to an end here. So a lot to dive into this weekend. Some kind of bot championships occurred. A whole bunch of different stuff happened this weekend, so happy to dive into it and good to be here with the fellas.
James, another man who's ready for the season to be over. Check in, bro. How are you?
The season's already over in my book. We aren't getting relegated on to the next season. I don't care about playing United next week. We could lose by 30. I don't care.
I think the announcers this weekend, when you all were playing City's second team, I think they said that you're officially finishing in the bottom half of the table. And it might be your worst ever finish in the Premier, at least in the last, 20 years or so. So I bet you're stoked.
On to the next one. Let's get the season over with.
You showed up. That's all that matters.
Yeah, you're really here. Stoked to see you. Andy Hoover, what's up, dude?
Yep, season's over. Just, around the corner, lads. No, we're good. Happy to be here. Enjoy this every week. So let's dive into why Tottenham's the worst. Woo!
I'm excited to see you specifically on this pod. I'm glad that you made it through the St. Louis City game this weekend and you didn't get stabbed by a Kansas City fan.
I was our season tickets are just too close, but frankly, to the away section, that is. But an 11th minute pen kind of quells some of the anger amongst the home fans. So it really ended up being more playful banter once we kind of took over the cleaners. So
there you go.
I love it. And last but certainly not least, gentlemen, I want to give a round of applause on this podcast. We have our gaffer, Mr. Ryan Butchart, securing his first district title as a women's head coach of Lafayette High School. Congratulations, my boy. How you feeling?
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. I'm feeling great, man. It's been a great few days, except Liverpool tied, which sucked ass. But no, it was great. I appreciated you guys being at my girls' games last week, man. It was fun. Dobes and wings for my eyes in the stands, which was awesome. I had some eyes up there to help me out, and it was fun. Good moment for them, bro.
It was so much fun.
When's the next game?
Yeah, job's not finished.
No, it's not.
When's the next game?
State quarterfinals will be played this Saturday, May 27th, 6 o'clock. So if we win that, we go to the Final Four for the first time since 1999.
Ooh, wow, that's huge, man.
But who's counting?
That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly right.
Good for you, bro.
You had such a good time that you almost left the trophy at OB Clark's. So, you know.
Here's the thing. I had a few Coca-Colas.
Green tea.
Green tea. A couple sodies.
Well, gentlemen, as always, we're going to dive into our weekly recap as well as look ahead to the big soccer Sunday that happens at the end of every season. We're going to look at St. Louis City and what they had going on against Kansas City. And lastly, we have our flowers and showers as well as Factor Cap, our weekly segment. So to kick us all off, Hoove, Tottenham against Brentford. You had a loss of 3-1. Yikes. I mean, you look happy over there. I don't know if that's like just smiling through the pain or what's going on.
It's I'm bound back-to-back weeks, and I'll be the first person to tell you back-to-back weeks not watching the game. Actually, no, that's not that's not true. I think I watched that. I don't remember which week it was, whatever. But they're all starting to blend together because they're all kind of the same. So, yeah, it was tough. Harry Kane scored a worldie, canceled out by three really, really unfortunate defensive efforts on Mbeumo and Wissa. And they could, in fact, do it without Ivan Toney. So good for Brentford. Brentford's great. I really like Thomas Frank. I have no quarrels with losing to them, but I do think they looked so good in the beginning in the first half. They should have had two, maybe three goals. But, you know, that doesn't change things when you're still susceptible to just letting three really weak, you know, defensive, you know, errors in. So, sucks. Harry Kane scored a fucking worldie, bro. That was sick. but other than that, rather disappointing. I think the worst part about all of it, and like I went on a little rant to you guys, and I don't even feel like I have a rant in me, but it's just it's just
until
weird.
Until Butch starts talking about Liverpool, you'll find it. Yeah, you'll find it.
We still haven't gotten to that one yet, but it's just so disheartening. And there's just nothing to look forward to. And like sometimes, you know, Spurs pull some things out of their ass, like Conte coming. And like I was more gassed about that than I had been related to Spurs since 2019. So like it doesn't matter what we do. They just piss it away. They did the like end of season honors or whatever after the game. Tone deaf. There were Levy
so out. So stupid, bro.
Tone deaf.
So
stupid. There were Levy out balloons on the field. Fans booed. There were Levy out signs. They were chanting Levy out. I was happy to see all of that. But like they were showing highlights of the year on the video board before the end of season honors. And like those highlights ended in February. They didn't play pretty much anything after that. Like there was just no the connection between the ownership and fans, I think, is worse than it's ever been. They've got season ticket holders of 30, 40, 50 years not renewing next year. They took the soul of the club, I think, when they got out of White Hart Lane and moved into this commercial facility. And they've turned Tottenham into this plastic looking Big Six club. Like that's what they are, because there's nothing there. There's trophies from the 60s and you know, whatever we won, the Mickey Mouse Cup in 2008 or some shit, but like
the Audi Cup.
Oh, that was in the summer. That was when we were around. That was some fun stuff, bro. Davidson Sanchez,
got you, bro. Don't worry.
Davidson Sanchez got to lift the trophy. So, yeah, it's everything's phony. We're gonna lose Harry Kane. We don't have a manager. They're not gonna hire a manager for a month. It's just like nothing looks good. Everything is not positive around the club. Like there's, you know, I want to go watch a game. I would love to. And now I'm like, you know, stuck between wanting these owners out and wanting to give them my, you know, $1,500 that it would take for me to get to the stadium and watch a game. So like, fuck that too. I don't even want to support them because they're what I feel to be the issue, and I think a lot of Tottenham fans would say the same thing. But there's just not a lot going here. I think Leeds win on Sunday. To be totally honest, and I bet there's going to be some juice on that money line, and I think Leeds win. I don't think there's anything that you can find inspiring about the Spurs performance.
That would be absurd.
I think it would be
crazy.
Dude, just to stay – like the win means they'd essentially probably stay up on the last day.
They would need Everton to lose. So pretty much
– I can't wait.
It all comes down to Everton, who's playing Bournemouth at home. But yeah, you know, like Elland Road's not an easy place to play. And we've seen week in and week out that these guys are allergic to pressure. And that's going to be a pressure-filled situation when realistically they don't have anything on the line. There's nothing – They're not fighting for jobs next year. They don't even know who the manager is going to be. We're not what? If we get 3 points and some results go our way with Villa, we'll play in the Conference League, which worked out great this year. It was so fun, you know, or last year. So, yeah, you know, you can – nobody hates Tottenham Hotspurs. Hotspur as much as Tottenham Hotspur fans. I swear to you, that is the most true statement.
I mean, you said tone deaf. I think that's the word. Yeah. I think that like they've just shown that they're tone deaf. And quite honestly, like I don't think we're doing much better over here with Manchester United. Our owners but are shit too. I think tone deaf is like the main thing.
There's a horizon on your guys' end at some point. Like if the Glazers are do decide to sell. That's a win. If the Glazers don't decide to sell, there's still conversations around potentially somebody coming in. I feel like you have had a year where you have a coach that you trust, and there's just things that are in place for you guys that have never really been in place for Tottenham. So I know I see where the comparison and disconnect is, but I just think it's so unbelievably blatant at Spurs that it's tough to truthfully want to get behind and watch. But I picked this effing team, and I'm going to be the weekly resident Tottenham fan on this podcast every week. So bring on the transfer rumors, lads. Let's do it.
We're so happy to have you, man. So, yeah, you playing Leeds this Sunday. Be a big one for you all, an even bigger one for them. So hopefully – I say this lovingly. I hope they show up for it.
Thanks,
I want a fucking soccer Sunday relegation battle thriller for the teams in the bottom five.
Yeah.
I want it to like go up and down and sideways. I hope that it's crazy. But
yeah, me too.
Butchie, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You also got good eveninged this weekend and should have lost the game, and you're fortunate to pull a goal.
70 minutes of stoppage time,
dude.
Seriously,
unbelievable. Butch, let me just ask you, bro. How does it feel being carried by the league through the season? not on your tactics, right, not on your players, but the league saying, "Let's give them let's give them every chance to pull a point." How does it feel?
It 10 minutes of stoppage time?
You guys are statistically the highest team with plus minus in VAR in the entire Premier League. Like that's tied with who? It's just you guys.
It's not a tie.
Look it up.
Just you.
He says prove it, you say it, and then he says cap.
We've looked into this stat. It is a fact.
We needed you last week, bro. So we got ammo. We got 2 weeks of ammo for you.
Let's steer clear of the VAR stuff. I got Pablo Escobar over here, Hoover, looking like he's ready to come at me. I want to wait a second here. Let's talk about the game.
Jacob Ramsey's the truth.
So, Aston Villa played well. Scored for – Jacob Ramsey is the truth.
In all
honesty, I'd like to see him – I know Villa's fighting for Europe, but I would like to see him go to like a top four or five. I think he could fit in at a really top club. He's a good player. Farewell tour for Bobby Firmino, Milner, two legends of the club, no doubt. I'm not even going to say Naby Keita because he's not a legend. The guy's made of glass.
Butch, I did see a tweet today that said it was like Bobby assisted Salah's first goal at Liverpool, and then Salah assisted Bobby's last goal at Liverpool. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad you brought that up because Firmino, like, I think it'll be a big loss for the club because he's just been so immense for us. So many big goals and big moments for him. I'm glad he got the goal too. I'm glad he scored in this game, you know, kind of like a farewell, even though we didn't get 3 points. But we had a goal chalked off by VAR. So there's your VAR. You know what I mean? Like they chalked it off. If we were paying the federation, they would have kept that shit.
Yeah, if you weren't, you'd be tied with Chelsea.
Oh shit!
True.
True.
Anyway, True. you know, it was a decent game. I thought I genuinely thought we were going to score more than one. I was looking for a second. I wanted a second. It's honestly a big momentum boost for United, because now everything's in their hands. You know, like, we have to bag on you guys losing two games for us to qualify, you know, so you got to go back to back L's, which I don't see happening. I know you guys just lost two in a row to West Ham and Brighton, but you had a bounce back win. I think you guys will win out, or at least stay above us. So it'll be tough watching booking my Thursday afternoons. It's going to be tough, man. I haven't had to do that in a very long time. So, Winks, I feel your pain, bro.
Oh, bro, I'm stoked. It's like a weird feeling, and I was going to talk about it briefly when we get to my game, but, like, for the teams who, like, go back and forth between Europa and Champions League every year, you don't get quite the excitement that you do from, like, not being in the UCL since the 2016-17 season.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm stoked.
Yeah. But overall, you know, move on. It's over. No more Liverpool talk. Anyways, who's next?
Dude.
That was awfully quick.
Dude, it was quick. I still am, like, waiting for next season to Butch, like, actually perk up when he's talking about Liverpool. I mean, the last, what, four episodes he's been on, he's, like, set world records for how short he can talk about this team. Because I don't even think Butch likes Liverpool. I think that everyone in the league, including Butch, is just like, fuck that team. I don't want to watch him anymore.
Bro, Butch just won a league title, bro. Barca, Xavi was lifted in the air and shit, bro. But
shish.
Look at that man's wall behind him. Not a single Liverpool thing in sight.
Bro, he's a closet Liverpool fan.
Hey, stop, you bonus. First of all, the flag on my wall is Lionel Messi. Okay. Second of all my Liverpool stuff is at my classroom at school, and it's right next to my desk. I call it the Liverpool corner. If you talk bad on Liverpool, you're getting an F. Okay. I'm writing F on your essay.
You wouldn't, though. You wouldn't.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
Okay, maybe not. That was exaggerated.
Dude, don't talk shit. That was a cap.
Yeah.
But no, the reason, in all honesty, the reason why I haven't talked much is, like, I'm like you guys, a few of you have said, I'm waiting for this season to be over. I want to see what transfers we bring in, because we're linked with Alexis McAllister, who I think is a good fit. I know some of you guys think he'd be an average fit. I think he'd be a great
super
fit.
Super average.
He's overrated.
James, you have no room to talk about average.
I think I have a vast knowledge of what is average.
Yeah, I think Jake, like, is probably the doctorate of average. 12?
Just calls it like he sees it, bro.
I would take Alexis McAllister over every single player on Chelsea's midfield. Every single
stop,
one.
Oh, stop, dude.
I think that's so not true.
There's no way.
N'Golo Kante, Kovacic. Mason Mount, who you're begging for.
No, Mason Mount.
No chance.
Mason Mount can clean my cleats, bro. Mason Mount can clean my cleats, okay? The only person on that team that I would
He'd step in and be your best midfielder.
Is Calvin. Enzo is the only one I'm taking. That's it. I'm not taking a 32-year-old Conte. I'm not taking freaking Kovacic. I'm not taking
I would take Kovacic in a heartbeat.
I was going to say, I don't want to keep him.
29. No, I don't want that.
We just signed Casemiro at 29, and he's the best midfielder in the league.
30, actually. Ooh.
Exactly.
Okay, he's not the best. Think he's better than De Bruyne?
Hot takes.
Look at you. You're laughing because you know I'm right. Freaking best midfielder in the league.
He's
man.
The best at getting suspended from games.
I'm trying so hard to have your back, and I'm like, I don't know if I can say that.
Bro, he'd be even better if he wasn't out for six games, but that does have a little bit of a.
When you just call somebody, yes.
Chipping his argument.
Hindsight's 20/20.
Oh, my God.
Butch, I think when we get to your, you know, whether it's next week or the week after, when we get to our season recap episode, I'll be really curious to hear you talk about, you know, your season, your best players, what's ahead in the transfer window. But moving on.
You all are our best player.
Curtis Jones?
Dude, stop.
Curtis Harvey Jones. Elliott.
James Milner.
What's that guy with the T and the S? The Simmy ass? What's his name?
Gündigan.
Since I heard that, I don't know how to say his name, but that was kind of a joke. But I have heard English pundits this week. I've been listening to people say Gunwan, and I'm like, wait. Like every time I hear someone say it incorrectly, now I'm like, that guy fucked it. He's English. Like he lives there. He does this.
Yeah. For a little bit. Dobes, man. 1-0 result against Bournemouth for our Manchester United boys. Is this just a, you know, get the job done on to the next, or is there a bigger story behind this result?
It's a little bit of that, but I think there's no secret if anybody watched the game. Like we dominated possession, but that was a little bit of it. We had a lot of great spells of possession. Eriksen, Bruno. Our back line was fairly quiet the entire game. But going forward, we just don't have it. We don't have anything dangerous. Like we've been saying this all season, like when we don't have Marcus Rashford, we just don't look like the same team. And how much we rely on one player. Honestly, it's why we need such an overhaul in the summer. But I'm happy with the result. The Casemiro finish was absolutely fucking world class. Yeah. I think the adjustment that he had to make after that ball got deflected, like the little header, and he had to sort of turn his body. Like, I think the finish isn't getting enough appreciation. But I think the other side of it is, in fact, not to just sit here and like keep saying it, but we are still in the final. And if you look at our form versus Man City's form of what they've been, like if we show up how we had the last 3 weeks, like it'll be 6-0. Like, I think that's what I'm a little bit. To where, like, yes, we do need to clinch. We need 1 point for next 2 games. I think we're going to get it done. Our home record is unbelievable. But I think in terms of we still do have a final to play, and watching Man City go and do what they did against Real Madrid, watching City do it week in and week out, even with their second team, and then watching us squeak out a 1-0 win against Bournemouth, like obviously I'm happy with the result, but with a final, it doesn't exactly give me confidence.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think for a lot of the season – you know, we've had the occasional slip up of, you know, obviously Liverpool 7-0, Brighton and Brentford both 4-0. Like we've had our slip ups, but a lot of the season we've been pretty solid defensively. Like that's what we've kind of built our like season on. And knowing that we're going into City with kind of a makeshift back four, you know, without Lissandro Martinez, potentially without Varane being fully healthy. It does scare me a little bit, but I am stoked that we got the job done, you know, over the weekend. I do have just, man, and I'd be curious your all's thoughts on this as like the non-United supporters, but I have just so many doubts about Jadon Sancho. I don't think we're going to offload him in the summer because I don't think anyone's going to pick him up for the money we'd be asking for him. But for me, like, I'm like, he's kind of on to his last leg. What do you guys think with Sancho?
He was out for so much of the season. It's tough to like judge it quite in that way. I definitely think from the games he's played, you could make that argument, but you also have to like see him play a full season to really, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of with that. I don't know. I don't think you're offloading him because that upfront price is just too much regardless. So, you know, you're going to see another year of him. But I do think like he's got these moments and flashes of being the guy that we thought he was. But the lack of consistency is concerning for sure. And, you know, I kind of feel for the guy. But when you get paid 300 whatever a week, you know, there's an Suck expectation that kind of comes with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with that. I do think there's a player there. Like what's funny, Hen, that you said this. Like I actually thought that Sancho was actually halfway decent. I just pulled up his stats from the weekend. It was 86 pass accuracy. 24 final third passes, 9 ball recoveries, 5 found ground duels won, 4-4 dribbles completed, 2 key passes. Like, so there's a player there. Like, on his day, like, I think that you can turn back the clock to what he was at Dortmund, but I think who've hit the nail on the head where the inconsistency is what, especially with the price tag and you add all the sort of different things to where in the Prem, you play at Manchester United, you have to perform or you're going to get criticized. I'm kind of just banking in the back of my mind, hoping that, like, you guys are right. It takes a full season and a full preseason of, like, being in a good headspace and, like, knowing you got to, like, be able to play may help him improve. But I also feel like that could just be a pipe
dream. He needs a 9.
Yeah.
Bro, a lot of your guys need a 9. Like,
100%. He's such a possession-based player too, where he likes to get in and combined. And I mean, he should and can has the ability to at least take guys on one-on-one. But when he has somebody to combine with at a nine consistently, like he can be nails. So I think that's a great shout.
I'm hopeful. Will we take on Chelsea in the weekend? We'll get to that in a second, or midweek
Side
rather.
Note, yeah, what's up, When is Antony going to learn when to make the pass when he needs to make the pass instead of shooting?
Holy shit,
or
bro.
Shoot when he should shoot instead of making a pass or taking five or six more dribbles.
I hope
because
Homer, man.
Because a few of you watched that game with me on Saturday morning, and Henry's jaw was just dropped for like 30 straight seconds.
It was on
in
floor,
one of those
bro.
Instances.
I've seen videos.
Crazy.
I've seen like TikToks all week of guys rewatching the United game, and like they would like pause it and restart it. Like he's like, I'm making this pass. Like starting it. He's like, I'm making this pass now. Like. No, that's insane.
Unbelievable.
The weak foot shot attempt was almost even worse. He was like 7 yards out goal, and it went to his right foot. And he just like my left foot when I try to shoot it, bro, went straight wide.
And then there was another chance that he had on his right foot. Like it was a clear through ball. Like he was clear on.
He just didn't even take it.
Yeah. Didn't even take it. He just tried to cut back, and then by that time there were two or three defenders on him. And
He's lucky he has his defensive work rate, or I would even just shit on him. But that's what he—that's about all he has going for him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, speaking of getting shit on, Nottingham Forest pulled out a 1-0 victory over the Arsenal Football Club.
That's an exaggeration.
Twinkie trees, baby.
Trees.
That's an exaggeration.
I want to call something out. I made a call out on the pod a couple of weeks ago about how Arsenal are going to lose to City, and that is not the last time that they're going to drop major points this season. And that happened, brother. What a terrible, terrible showing from the Arsenal Football Club.
Any other comments to add there on your wonderful intro? Thank you.
644 passes to 80.
That's
right in Georgia's wheelhouse. Accurate passes. Accurate passes. They completed over 700.
And that's the crazy part, Jake, is like to me, so had a couple of the guys over to watch the game, had an electrician over at the same time and was having to like run out and help him. So I didn't get to sit down and like watch the full thing, but have since watched. Thanks, Butch. We can't see anything though.
1-0.
But have since, you know, read a lot and watched a lot of clips. And from what I saw, Jorginho looked like one of our best players on the field. Odegaard didn't have his best day. Not the result we wanted, obviously. In addition to having, you know, four key injuries, I feel like I don't have any room to talk about being injury ridden like Jake does. But, you know, towards the end of what's been a super underwhelming season, this ending to the season has been underwhelming on top of what's been an overall awesome. Yeah. All right. On top of what's been a super fun season to watch. I think that we all expected Arsenal to come out differently after losing to Brighton last week. But we just didn't do anything with the over 80% possession that we had. You know, we led in every single stat category except for like big chances, which is obviously the most important one. So, you know, really weird lineup too. Kiwior and Partey were our wingbacks. First time that either of them have played wingback this season, which is cool. Side note, Gibbs White is nails.
Guys,
still a baller.
Fun to
nails,
watch, dude.
Yeah.
Up and back.
But just workhorse.
Yeah.
But kind of an unfortunate goal on a spoon-fed back pass mistake by Odegaard that ended up deflecting off Gabriel's foot when he went in for the challenge. But in hindsight, you know, if we were going to lose and City was going to clinch the title at some point anyways, I'm glad that the boys in blue were able to give them the proper guard of honor before the game. So good for you guys. We've been there. So glad that you guys get to see how that feel. But, you know, as a supporter, it's been, like I said, an underwhelming end to an otherwise really, really fun season to watch. But at the end of the day, heartbreaking. On a positive note, though, I know you guys all saw that Arteta is being given roughly $200 million, and I know that to spend this summer, and I know that, so I know that you, and we'll talk about, you know, transfer rumors and all that stuff on another pod, but, you know, this is one of the first summers or transfer windows really where Arteta, well, the first one since Arteta's been the boss that he's being given this much room to purchase players on top of, you know, whoever we end up selling, assuming that they give him that extra bit of money to spend towards players. But, you know, I hope we use that really wisely. And I think there's a ton of different ways we can go with this. But I just hope they do it right so we can make, you know, an even stronger push in the Prem next year. And obviously the UCL as well, which, like I said, couldn't be more excited to be back in.
What's your number one? You don't have to say the person, like the target, but like what position are you, like if you got a chunk of that 200, what position do you want to go after first?
Yeah, probably in a six. I think you can make an argument for another winger or another center back, but I think that it sucks so much that West Ham's like we're putting 120 million on Declan Rice, because I don't think any of us think he's a $120 million player even with inflation. But I think we have to go after him.
Thanks, Todd Boehly.
Yeah, bro.
you have to replace Xhaka.
Yeah.
Because he's out. He gone.
We do.
That's a starter. Yeah.
And so Rice, Caicedo are the two main guys that we're linked with for, you know, they could play that position. But I'd love to see Declan Rice there. I think that him, Partey, and Odegaard in the middle would be just disgusting.
In all serious though, like Gundogan on a on a 2 year deal, I think obviously you have to get somebody else. Like I who knows if these rumors are true. Of course Arteta likes him.
He would be a similar signing to the reason that we signed Jorginho in January, in my opinion. Like
two years price,
older guy, cheaper, a lot of championship experience.
City reject.
But like that's a presence who I think can like get you over the hump to win a title that you need in your team. Like Zinchenko and Jesus have been there.
City rejects.
Like now you're getting genuinely are. But now you're getting like a full on captain of City who's been there and done it like three or four years in a row, and are arguably been one of the most important pieces in the team. So like I think 2 years is solid. I think that'd be so sick.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to get a Gundogan jersey for sure. But
he's an Arsenal player too with the Arteta style.
Bro. Yeah. Him, Caicedo, Rice, whoever. But the problem is obviously Gundogan would be cheap, but Rice and Caicedo are like roughly 200 mil together in terms of what the teams are asking on a price tag. So
I hope Caicedo stays and plays on Thursdays.
Yeah. So it's like, We'll see what happens there, you know, and like I said, we'll dive deeper into transfers another time, because since Griff and I did the Mecca Moments on Arsenal, a lot has changed as far as, you know, who our targets are for the summer, what players other teams are asking us to, you know, bid on Javi Simmons at PSV, etc. So I'm excited to dive into that.
Your dynasty came to an end since you recorded, so you know.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But
the sneaky good pickup in Jorginho has done wonders. He's been great for you guys.
I still think there's.
I think he slowed the game down massively this weekend. I think that he completely ruined any fucking offense the you could have had.
Is still there. It's still Jake's stomach. It.
Yes, but he was also far and above the player that delivered the most final third passes for our team that game. So regardless of if he slowed the game down, like he was the guy that was trying to, you know, make things happen in the final third the most. And I think that we saw that in several tiny spells throughout our season this year where in a lot of games, you know, that we won and got 3 points from, there were a lot of opportunities where we didn't create big chances, where we were just kind of possessing it around their final third and weren't you know, making penetrating passes or crossing the ball in when we needed to. And I hope that that's a problem that we solve going into next year, because we should have scored. We should have scored way more this year all around than we did.
I think for watching the entire game that, yes, Jorginho might have had the most balls in the final third, whatever, but taking the ball away from Odegaard to give Jorginho the ball is not a trade-off that you want to have, at least personally.
We said this last week, that there's a world where the games that Jorginho looks the best means that it's not going the way
he just touched the ball the most.
Oh, yeah.
it's the Ronaldo effect from last year. Ronaldo was like our 100%. Most influential player. Our team was the worst it's ever been. Yeah.
Winks, real quick before we move on, I gotta get one in.
dude.
at this moment in time, I'll save a lot for the season review. But like at this moment, are you Arteta in right now?
For sure. 100%.
I have to ask. Ole got fired for similar seasons, so like just wanted to check to see what the pulse was at Arsenal.
Yeah, we're not as bipolar as you United fans are. So you know,
just wanted to check in, see where the pulse was with the Arteta crowd.
It has been consistent progress since he joined. So we don't give up on those guys after 6 months.
Dude, maybe one day on this podcast you'll have like at least a semi emotional reaction to your team. It's like you have like the most PR positive like responses to Arsenal. Like no one's giving a fuck, man. You can say whatever you want.
I know.
Like,
no, I know. I just
no one's policing it.
He like leaves and just goes into the punching bag and just hits it fucking 50 times.
No, it's I know that sometimes you guys try and get reactions out, and you know, like, yeah, I'll
that's
go
a genuine thought though.
Yeah, no, I honestly do you guys like him? Like if this happened to you guys knowing Dobes, I'll ask you specifically since you asked the question, but knowing how the team has overall progressed since he took over, what the team that he came into to now, obviously a disappointing, you know, last couple months and end to the season, but he's a young manager. He has like the second youngest team in the Prem. Like, would you give up on a manager at this point, knowing that he's got a summer coming up where he can spend over $200 million on players?
I think this is the biggest summer of his managerial career.
Yeah.
Because this is not year one. It's not even year two. It's not year three. Like, or is it year three? I don't even know. Is this his fourth?
I think this will be his fourth.
The next one's going to be his fourth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the progress is there, but I think after this window, like, it just depends on what the standards of your man Stan Kroenke are. Like, if he's cool with, like, second place in Champions League, then, like, that is what it is. Like, I genuinely think it depends on what the standards are. Like, I think next year it should be Premier League title or bust. Doesn't necessarily mean if he doesn't do it that you can fire him, but I just think that that's sort of what the standards need to be, and especially if he's going to get a summer to spend $200 million. Like, I think that just sort of depends on what the standards are. Definitely have to bring him back after the progress this season, because I've said it a million times, even as much hate as Arsenal, they've progressed and been the best team in the world at times. But at the same time, that's all fun and nice to say, but you have nothing to show for it.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's sort of the sort of opposite side there is, like, Arteta is a great manager, but at the end of the day, like, you get judged based off of what you win. Mm-hmm. And that's how Ten Hag is going to get judged. That's how Poch will get judged at Chelsea. Like, that's what, you know what I mean? That's at the end of the day, that's what it is. And so I think at the end of the day, he needs just, what do you win? FA Cup? So he's got one. But I think he just needs to make that jump forward with, especially with the money he's getting.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. I think this like upcoming season is a big one for him, and if it's anything less than a title, I think that, you know, it's deserving to have the conversation that he might be out at the end of the season, which is crazy to say, but I think it's there.
Long way to go till then.
Yeah, you know, a couple more PR answers before then. So up ahead, we have Soccer Sunday coming this weekend. So all of the teams play on the final day of the season. It's one of the best events of the year. But before we get there, Chelsea boy, we have the Chelsea lost to City's second team, 1-0. And then you play United midweek. Talk to us a little bit about the game against City's second team. And then is there anything that you're looking forward to against United?
I watched for 11 minutes this weekend. Do you guys know what happened in the 11th minute?
No.
Chelsea got scored against, so that means Chelsea loses 11 minutes into the game. Super, super fun to watch. Yeah, I literally turned it off after 11 minutes. And I don't remember if I was texting in the group with Hoover or who it was, but somebody mentioned that they were playing their second team, and I still said we're going to lose.
Yeah.
There is, you did say that.
Quite literally zero hope on our side. Playing a 3-5-2 with Havertz and Sterling up front. Aspilicueta looks more and more out of place every single game that he plays, which is sad. I think Fofana had the worst game of all. I think that he was in no man's land for 99% of the time. But bright spot, Lewis Hall still looks great as a left back.
Baller, bro.
Yeah, still great. Wish he played for the last 3 months. But yeah.
He hasn't gotten caught.
Looking forward to United. I hope to spoil all of your fun. Thanks, man. I hope we actually take out all of our chances of winning for the rest of the year and put it on that game. I think that'd be awesome. But other than that, no, on to next season. I don't care anymore.
Is Lampard, and this isn't even like trolling Jake, but Lampard's got to be up there with the worst managers in the Premier League history. Like, I mean, this is insane.
Yeah.
That lineup, like knowing you're playing Man City was... City are great. Their second team is all that and fantastic, but nobody's second team should be able to come out and do that to Chelsea.
Half of them were kids, bro. They were kids, and like Henry said, kind of hungover vets. Bro, they knew that the league was over. They were shitty.
Fucking Cole Palmer had Aspilicueta and it's going in circles, man.
Okay, Butch, genuinely, I want your take on this because obviously you're the coach of the group. Is it a matter of Lampard actually being that? Is he that bad of a coach, or is it just the team's underperforming?
I don't know enough about what's going on behind the scenes, but if I had to guess, I don't think Lampard is as smart as he portrays himself to be. So I think the players may underperform a little bit, but I don't think he genuinely knows what he's doing in terms of getting results.
I mean, I just think that's crazy. How is it? And just because you're a great player doesn't mean that you're going to be a great manager, but how are you at the pinnacle? I mean, we're talking about Lampard as one of the best midfielders of all time. How are you that dominant in the game for that long, winning as much as you have, and not be able to understand a tactical breakdown of an like opposing team, or being able to like make an adjustment mid-game? Like, you have to make those decisions every single moment while you're playing. I just don't understand how he's that bad of a manager.
Well, and he just is. He's terrible. None of the lineups have been consistent either, though. Like, I think the number one thing is he's a horrible man manager. So, like, he already has guys that aren't willing to do the things that he says. But you're right. Like, to a certain degree, the lineups are different. The formations are different. There's no – like, when you have a bare-bones team, like Spurs had been in the previous, you know, scenarios – like, Conte came in was like, this is what the fuck we're going to do. I don't give a fuck what other teams are going to line up against us with. Like, Frank hasn't done that. There's been no identity at all. Like, even no glimpses. Like, you get the ball wide and you cross balls to Sterling. Or you run two up top and there's no interchange. Like, nothing's been consistent.
You have Kai Havertz, who plays more as a right midfielder than he does as a striker. Like, that's like point blank. He takes balls when he is overlapping with Aspilicueta, and he's the guy that sticks there. And he doesn't get into the box, and he doesn't put any effort to go forward. I don't know if it's him finally saying, fuck you, and like, I'm a cam or whatever it might be. But like, the dude doesn't even try anymore. And it's so frustrating because it's the same thing that I've said since week one this year. It's the same thing I said last year. It's like, he's just a waste of space. But I think Frank Lampard was horrible the first time around. I think he's horrible the second time around. I just don't understand like what he does after this. I think that when you like, just in terms of like Trevor Chalobah has played in four different positions in the last 4 weeks. like a young kid who at the beginning of the season said he might get like maybe 10 starts this year, right? And he started the last four in four different positions, including playing on two opposite sides of the field. Like he's played as a midfielder, he's played as a right wing back, a center back, and now a left back. Like, got to figure that out.
It's not good for consistency. Yeah, it's terrible. I think best case scenario for Frank genuinely is he goes and is an assistant somewhere for a while. I think he goes and like learns from a top class manager and maybe like revisits management in 10 years. I think he needs to get away from being like the guy, because I even think about like going to the MLS or something, and you still like you still have to know what you're doing in the MLS. Like it's just it's not good. And if
but similar, he can't even go to like. In my opinion, you can't even go commentate right now.
Yeah,
like it's bad. Gary Neville, after he did in La Liga, like he had to wait a year before he could just go join in the booth because he was taking shit. Like,
yeah,
could you imagine like Carragher, like all those guys, and just
oh, they just ream them.
It'd be terrible.
He's got to take a couple of years off, in my opinion.
Well, James, the bright spot for the Chelsea United game in the coming days is that we will be in New York watching that game together in a soccer bar in New York. So hopefully we'll get some content for the fellas up on the TikTok, up on the Instagram. So I couldn't be more excited to be watching that one with you. And to look ahead to Soccer Sunday, fellas. Now, we're not going to dive into each one of our teams because for the majority, if United wins against Chelsea on Thursday, then that should be the top four wrapped. And the rest of the positions, it might change a little bit between like six and sevens, but the top eight is pretty solidified at the moment. The three games that I really want to focus on in this segment are Leeds versus Tottenham, Leicester versus West Ham, and Everton versus Bournemouth. Those are three positions that could go down going into the final day. So, gentlemen, do we have any thoughts on who's going to join Southampton as the relegated teams for this year?
Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester was my one.
Leicester and Leeds, in my opinion. I think Leeds can still beat Spurs, and I have yet to look up the money line on that as of right now. But again, doubling down on Leeds beating Spurs. But Everton just have to win. And Everton have the easiest game at home against Bournemouth. And I think there's something about playing Everton away. Yeah, Wings, it's tough. Tough place. Sean Dyche, and they did the exact same thing last year. They've been there. They've done that. They've pulled themselves from this relegation situation before. I think they're going to end up being fine. Give me James Maddison, 30 mil.
I was gonna say, who do you guys want to stay up? Like, if you one team out of the three that are technically in it, like who, if you could pick, who would stay up?
Not Everton.
The thing is like when I look at Everton, Leicester, and Leeds, all three of them should not be in that position. Like
I don't want any of them to go down. Genuinely, right. I don't want any of them to go down. Like, I enjoy all three of them in the Prem.
I think that all three of them do need a little bit of that like culture shock of going down to figure out like what's going on. I mean, Everton was in this position last year. Like,
yeah,
they didn't get better this year. They separated with Lampard, but like
I was gonna say, who's their manager again?
Yeah, it was like the final day, and like all of their fans stormed the field and shit like that. But like Leeds, you know, I feel like I want Leeds to stay because they're such a good spectacle. Like every game that they play is fun. And then also Tyler. But like I have to believe that like if Leeds go down, Tyler gets the opportunity to go somewhere else. And maybe that's cool to watch him on a different team other than Leeds. But like they've been missing him like crazy the last couple of like weeks or months or whatever since he's been out. So I think if I could choose one of the three, I'm choosing Leeds. Just because I think they're the most fun to watch, and I'd be interested in Everton and Leicester's players picking them up on the transfer market than Leeds' players other than Tyler.
I totally agree. I want to see the Americans go somewhere cool and make it, at least for me, a little bit more exciting to watch them. Leeds is great at times and horrible at times. I think it would be really interesting to see where they land.
I saw for the future.
I saw a tweet today that I kind of agreed with, and it all kind of hinges on Tyler getting out. But I think the championship, in the same way that it was good for Josh Sargent, could be very good for Tyler Adams.
Aaronson.
I think he gets more minutes. I think he plays in a little bit less competition and something that may not be as physical. Because you know Josh has had a hell of a year, so I think there could be some resurgence from him, which is positive. But that totally hinges on the fact of Tyler Adams got to get out if they go down. And it sounds like Weston's not going to be re-signed. He's already on a loan from Juventus, and people are having conversations with him. So, you know, it was fun while it lasted with Leeds USA, but I think we need the boys on some competitive minutes, and whether that be lower level for Aaronson, good, or you know, top six, top 10 for Tyler, good. So, best case.
I'm with Hoove. I it's going to sound weird, but like, surprisingly, I've watched a lot of Leicester, I've watched a lot of Leeds, as well as Everton. And, like, I can't sit here and say that, like, I don't want any of them to go down, but I can't sit here and honestly say that Leicester or Leeds, like, deserve to stay.
No, they're so bad,
dude. For a long, long time, they have been so fucking bad. And, yes, Everton's been so bad at moments, but, like, at the same time, I can honestly say that I've seen spells of Everton be great.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't consistent enough. They've had different managers. So, like, if Everton stayed up, I think they genuinely deserve it. I do think you're right, though. Like, I could see if they do go down, like, I'm not necessarily worried about Tyler. I'm not necessarily worried about Wes. I think if they wanted to, they could potentially make moves. I know Wes is linked to a ton of clubs in the Prem. Brighton. Yeah, I mean, Brighton would be sick.
A good
I would
fit.
Fucking love yep. him at Brighton. But yeah, I think Everton deserves to stay up. And honestly, like you said, like James Maddison for 40 million would be pretty fucking cool.
I just think that for Everton, it would be so good for their club if they went down. Their ownership is shit. They have a terrible ownership model. I think that would be best for them. With Leeds, I think they need to look at themselves in the mirror and figure out what's going on there. But time will tell. You know, I think this weekend everyone has a lot to play for, and I think Leeds certainly have the hardest game of all of that. You know, West Ham is safe. They might be resting some guys because they're ahead in Europe as well. So who knows what's going to happen. But, gentlemen, we have St. Louis City to talk about, coming off a 4-0 rout over Sporting Kansas City. Fuck those guys, by the way.
Fuck those guys.
Easy.
I mean,
easy.
Just
cool rivalry to see like the rivalry on social media, but fuck those guys.
Dude. You like they, I was seeing fans. I actually was just chirping all week on Twitter just because that's kind of what I do. But there were fans, like just some of the things that they were saying about St. Louis, the things that they were saying about the, you know, their owner coming out and tweeting about, you know, St. Louis football history and relocation. Like, they were saying, they were saying some shit. Frankly, we said this last week. There's no such thing as a must-win game for an expansion team in May. This one was, and they showed up and they did it, bro. They did it, and it was good. It was a glass of cold water for everybody on the squad to know that we can do it without Klaus. But also, Kansas City looked really bad.
Horrible.
The goalkeeping was tough. I think I saved that Indiana Vasilev shot on the second goal. And you know, him cooking Graham Zusi, something poetic, it was awesome. Something poetic about that though. I did love that.
It was interesting watching like from the get go, the lineups got dropped and we were so curious of what was going to happen at the left back situation. Obviously Nelson was on a red card suspension, so we knew that he wasn't going to be in the game, but Kyle Hebert comes in at left back and puts in an absolute shift. I tweeted it during the game. I knew that it wasn't going to happen because like Vasilev had two goals. We had some guys that put up some really good points. Stroud had two assists, But Hebert was up there like my man of the match contention, bro. He was nails on that left-hand side, literally didn't do a single thing wrong the entire time. The only thing that you can kind of like talk on is in the first half, he had two attempts to cross it with his left foot. That man cut it right back and passed it to Lowen, a 6-yard pass from our left back. But hey, that he got more forward than Nelson has gotten in like 8 games. So like, I think that Hebert came in and put in a shift. But how good was Indiana Vasilev, bro? Like, he took that game over, was in all of the right positions, and I was so stoked for the kid.
I liked his advanced position a lot, and I think Blom is the key that unlocked everything.
He gave that security, bro.
He unlocked all of it, and it was so cool to see Indy and Lowen just have the freedom to be the player that they can be. Like I said 2 weeks ago, without Klaus and anyone else really backing up Lowen in the middle, he does too much. He may just be overextending. He was great because he had backup, and Blom just, I mean, he swept it all. And it was so good on the ball, dude. Like, I didn't know who I was watching. I was standing next to Dan Hornsey at the game. And every time he'd do anything, the littlest of turns, quick little 1-2s, I would just punch Dan and be like, this is who we thought he was, bro. This is the guy. This is the guy that we thought.
Yeah.
And he was. Yeah. He was so comfortable, so smart on the ball. I can't talk enough about him. And I think he I don't want to say he got snubbed from the team of the week on the MLS because we did have three other players in that. But, you know, it's those sixes do so much for a team, and they're so underappreciated. So I think he needs flowers here and there just to be like, no, defensive, nails, smart on the ball, quick out, finds low, and we're up. Like it just worked to a T in the way that we like to play, which that looked a lot more like the first 5 weeks. So
yeah, I thought first off, great game to be at, like an unbelievable atmosphere, but like all four goals. I mean, the pen was not a pen. If you've seen the replay, definitely 100% not a pen.
No shot.
But like you said, Hoof, that sort of set the tone. And from there, like the next three goals that we scored in that game were all class. Like one started from the Blom buildup. He beat him. The overlapping run. Like we 100% deserved to win that game. And it was nice seeing like the difference in the game. Like Hoof, you mentioned it, but like the goalie. Like we haven't talked about Berkey. Like, he didn't have a ton to do, but when he was called upon late in the second half, like those back-to-back-to-back saves, like absolutely unbelievable. I've been so kind of like wishy-washy on him in terms of like, he just came over here, it's a retirement move, but like you can tell that like he wants to prove something to
Dortmund
for letting him go, because that save was unbelievable.
Dude.
I think the last point that I'll make about the game, that we sort of said it beforehand, like that this City team needed like a win. It was kind of like weird to say that it was a must win, but I also think, as like cheesy as it sounds, like that game meant a lot to so many people from St. Louis who like grew up playing soccer in St. Louis being in the soccer capital. And so there was like people that like genuinely had like emotions riding in that game. And I think that you saw the players like take that energy and actually feed off of that, which having weeks in a row, we've seen a lackluster performance and them not be great. Yes, Sporting was fucking terrible. But just the fact that the guy showed up like that and just with that performance is exactly what you could ask for, especially against your rival.
And I heard interviews, and gosh, I actually listened to Berkey this morning on ESPN Radio, and he'd said they asked him, like, did teams just start to figure out St. Louis? And he was like, yeah. Like, yes. We didn't have anything that we were able to change for the time being. You know, when you're super confident in your style, 9 times out of 10, that shouldn't matter, and you can beat them the way that they know that you're going to try and play. And that's what Carnell, I think, preaches, with minor tactical changes here and there. So this one was one of those, to where we didn't stray from how we played. They leaned into the crowd so hard, and they just made Kansas City's back line so uncomfortable the entire game. So it was a Carnell masterclass, if we're gonna start throwing out, you know, managerial credit here. So, but yeah, it was huge, and it feels like a turning point. At least, you know, we're gonna get João Klaus back. He and Nico just link up so well. I think, you know, there will be tweaks throughout the season, but it really is back to the way that we feel that we should play every week.
But the Nico finish was fucking class.
It was awesome. Oh, it was awesome. Yeah,
it was a nice little through ball too. And yeah. He took that perfect touch to set the goalie up for that. And then the dink was perfect.
You see those flashes.
He also had that one that there was like that breakout where he like flew down the wing, took like everyone on, and then just like barely made the wrong touch at the very end. But like, it is funny, like, I don't know if you all think about this, but like every once in a while I'll like watch the MLS and I'm like, you know, I played soccer at like a high level, like how would I do out there? Like if you threw me into that game, how would I do? And like sometimes I'm like, I, you know, I could have done better, I could have made that save, I could have whatever. That run that Giacchini made and like the center back was like chasing after him, I was like, I would have gotten dusted so bad. Like I would have taken that card 2 touches into that run. Like I was slide tackling that guy from behind. I mean, the wheels on that guy.
Bro, Madison the entire game kept going, like, why aren't you playing? Like why aren't you out there? I'm like, I have 2 tall boys next to me. Like that's why I'm not fucking
like that ship has sailed, baby. But I was sick in my day. The St. Louis City boys have Vancouver this weekend, which is a little ode to Timmy Parker's origins in the MLS. I believe that Nowinski was from Vancouver as well, so I know that those games or that game will mean a lot to those guys, so we'll see how we do this weekend. Before we move into our factor cap, we have our weekly segment of the flowers and showers. Now this one is a group decision. This one is our first our first on this podcast where the whole group is taking these flowers and showers. So to start off with the flowers, boys, I don't know about you all, but I'm excited for the U.S. men's national team. Can anyone tell us why we're excited for the U.S. men's national team? Florian Balogun is coming to the U.S. men's national team. He got the official okay from FIFA. He changed his allegiance from England to the United States. This could be the number 9 that we have waited for years. I mean, we've seen guys try to plug that position, and this one is by far the most prominent one that we've had. He's the only one of those guys that have done it in a big 5 league since Clint Dempsey. So this is big for the U.S. men's national team. How are y'all feeling about it?
Jacked. I do think it's funny, though, that he scored this weekend, and now all of a sudden they're posting about he's the first American to score 20 goals in Europe's top 5 league.
Yeah. I was like, did he score 1 as an American or 20?
He posted it, too. Yeah. He posted the video to be the first American. I was like, this guy knows it, bro. He's just spitting in Southgate's face. Yeah.
I'm jacked about it. I do think that he has the potential to be that 9 that we've missing. I've been binge watched YouTube videos of sort of his highlights, even from back at like his Arsenal days, and he's a special talent. I do think he's got a lot of pressure sort of coming on his shoulders that like probably has nothing to do with himself. But just because he has scored 20 goals, and he has done what he's done this season, like people are going to expect him to perform. And there's also some guys who I definitely say he's better than, but are going to be fighting for that spot right behind him for that 9. Yep. So he's got to come in and score goals for us, but super jacked up for him. We haven't had like sort of a prospect like him as a 9, and I don't even know what – if you want to call Dempsey a 9. Like,
yeah. I mean, he's such a –
I don't even know who the last one was, bro.
He's such a different kind of player, and what will be interesting to watch is like as this young core of Americans are kind of like building together in what will be the 2026 World Cup, the style of play is definitely going to have to get solidified. I think a lot of the times when we're watching, you know, Jesus Ferreira drop in there or Brandon Vasquez, you know, most recently drop in there, whoever is going to play that 9, like we try to tailor our style around that. And sometimes they're not involved whatsoever. But I think that Flo is going to command the ball a little bit more. He's going to be asking more of his teammates. And I think that that's good for all the guys behind him. So I'm hoping that they can build that chemistry ahead of 2026. And, you know, we have a lot of years to do it, 3 years before we kick off here in America for that World Cup.
I think it's huge in terms of the competition, Dobes. You mentioned it, but I don't think this is a bad thing for Ricardo Pepi. Like, I think Ricardo Pepi is seeing this at 19 years old after being the other most recent dual nat to be like, yeah, I'm going to do it with the Americans.
Pepe's got a big move coming too.
I think there's so much positive in his game too, and they're just not the same player, which plays into our hands so well. So it at least gives us options looking in the next 2, 3, 4 years. But yeah, you're right. You can't deny the season that Flo's had. And, you know, dude, he scored like 4 or 5 like full volleys in France this year.
Bangers.
Screamers, bro. It's insane.
I love that. Now, unfortunately, on the showers side of the conversation, we're giving showers to La Liga and Valencia's fan base. Now, to welcome everyone into the conversation, for the entire, I mean, since he started at Real Madrid, Vinicius Jr. has just gotten racially abused every single stadium that he goes to. I mean, he's not the first black player to play in La Liga. He won't be the last, but for whatever reason, he gets it every single game. I can't even tell you how many times we've seen it this season alone. But what happened, you know, this past weekend against Valencia is he was getting abused the entire game. Then the goalkeeper of Valencia just all of a sudden went ballistic, came running up to Vinny, then one of Valencia's defenders put Vinicius in a headlock. All the teams came together, and somehow throughout it all, Vinicius is the one that gets the red card. No one else, no other suspensions, no other anything. And here we are, you know, the day after, 2 days after the game, looking at that, saying, what the fuck is La Liga doing? And La Liga's president comes out and makes a statement of you know, doubling down on the racism. So I think, you know, from all of us, it's an absolute joke of an organization La Liga is, and those fans at Valencia can get fucked. I mean, it's just, we love this game. We absolutely love it. We'll watch it every day. But when you start, like, you know, doing that because of someone's race, when you start chanting at someone because of someone's race, it's so disrespectful and it's so gross. Like, it's such a disgusting thing to watch.
But it doesn't make sense.
No.
Like, everything, all of the reaction from La Liga and Valencia, none of it makes sense. Like, just the sort of lack of awareness and, like, the lack of, like, the reading the room. Like, how many ex-players have come out just, like, calling out La Liga? Like, everybody that you can name it, as mm-hmm. they should. And that's what I think is so, like, the craziest part about it to me is the fact that, like, not only is this, like, the first time, this is, like, Vinny gets it every single time that he plays and nothing gets done. Like, there's never repercussions. Like, there's no fans leaving the stadium. I think that's the most frustrating part, is this isn't the first time.
Yeah.
And if La Liga acts how they have, it's not going to be the last. And that's the worst part about it.
Ancelotti and his special player. Ancelotti in his press game conference says, like, you know, you have conversations with players all the time, and you always ask, like, you know, sometimes they're not having a good game, they're off their form. So you ask them, like, hey, do you want to get subbed? Or, like, let's get you out there. But to have a conversation with a player ever to say, do you want to get subbed because you're getting racially abused, so crazy, you have to come off the field, it's bullshit, bro.
And, like, to Vinny's credit, he never wants to. He wants to fucking score, and he wants to fucking dance in your corner, and he's going to do it. So, it's so much love to Vinny and, you know, obviously anyone who's gone through that. But just the general lack of response at all, and, like, it happens in England. It happens in England. England's not special, but –
It happens everywhere.
That's the shitty part about it. But in England, we've seen guys recently, Chelsea fan, have his season ticket revoked because he was making eyes at Sonny. And it was a one-off instance. Bad guy does not necessarily reflect on all Chelsea fans. But for the entire stadium to be chanting at him, and there to be a reaction from Valencia that says Vinny needs to stick to what he knows, and Vinny needs to, you know, not generalize Valencia fans – that's insane. I want a relegation. Like, I want something like that.
Yeah.
Nothing good comes after this. I don't blame him. I've seen Fabrizio tweet a lot. He has no plans on leaving Madrid, but I'm with Rio Ferdinand. Rio Ferdinand was like, this kid needs protection, bro, for the country that he's living.
What is he 21?
What the fuck is 22. He doing?
21 years old, 22 years old, like, he's still developing, bro.
He needs someone to be there with him. He's the best winger. I want him out.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch the La Liga. You know, I'm it's so disheartening and discouraging after like a lot of growth, I think, around the world in just the, you know, race department in general, and just to see the time just tick backwards on this one. Fucked.
I guess like it's so obviously La Liga's response is so confusing, but like Valencia has black players. Like, you know, you're like,
none of it makes sense, dude.
Yeah, you're like chanting at Vinny, and it's like all of the players on the field hear it. It's not just him. So it's like, how do you, as a black player at Valencia, say, yeah, I'm going to like rep this badge. I'm going to like show up for this team week in and week out. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if like there was, you know, mutiny amongst the Valencia players.
Right, and that's my thing, is like, how is it always subject to him? Like, that's what I don't understand, because this is what, the fourth or fifth time that it's gone everywhere year?
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts. It literally makes no sense. And like, Huva's talking a lot about being tone deaf, but I think like La Liga is being extremely tone deaf to other things that are happening around the world. And it makes him look worse and worse. And I think it gains, for Vinny, it gains fans from across the world for dealing with it and wanting to continue 100%. Playing and all of that stuff. Like, I'm more of a fan of Vinny now than I ever have been, even though he just knocked us out of the Champions League. Like, more of a fan than ever. Seriously. Like, I think it takes a big man to take that, and not saying I've ever dealt with anything like that, but like, it takes a big fucking man to deal with that.
Yeah. And it takes a big man to come out and call out La Liga too. Like, not just saying like, oh, this is like something that I deal with, but to say, no, La Liga is the issue. Like, they're not protecting me. They're not protecting us as, you know, black players. I think that's huge. You know, we talk about like social activism and how athletes have such a unique platform, and not everyone uses that platform. And so I'm hoping that with his statements, with the former, you know, players coming out and talking as well, I hope that there's something that can happen inside of La Liga, because right now it's what a shit product and like what a shit organization to deal with.
I hope he continues to just tear La Liga apart.
Same.
Like, that's the best thing that he can do, is if he just continues to blow up that league and Real are good. Like, that's like obviously it doesn't make anything better, but
that's a double-edged sword, though. Like, if he continues to crush it and do well, like, he's just making the league more money, getting more viewers for the league.
That's a good point.
On the other end of the stick, you could also say, like, I wish a club in another league, you know, had the ability to sign him for next season, so that, you know, a lot less people, especially from Brazil, would be watching
100%
La Liga next year because he's not there.
The Brazilian president came out and made a statement. Like, the globe is aware of this, you know. How do you feel so isolated to be so wrong? The Brazil won't watch the Spanish league anymore. Like, as a country, it's useless to them. You just spit on on Brazil's love child. Unbelievable.
And there's supposed to be guys like Endrick, the 16-year-old in Brazil, who's supposed to be going to Real Madrid, you know, next year or the year after. Like, that could fall through. There's just a lot of bullshit. But, you know, gentlemen, before we hang the show up on Factor Cap, we have a huge game on Saturday. Borussia Dortmund is in pole position to win the Bundesliga for the first time in a while, after Bayern Munich slipped up heavily against Leipzig, under Thomas Tuchel, by the way, who has now lost more games than Nagelsmann, and yet is
we got
still
secret
in
entrance everywhere, baby. We got them at Arsenal. We got them at Bayern. We got them everywhere.
So Dortmund take that's the big game. If Dortmund wins, they win the title. So they play Mainz at home. At 8:30 a.m.
It's Central. The only game.
It's the only game that matters in that lineup. Now, how are we feeling? I know that you all, I mean, we all have been massive fans of Dortmund throughout the entire season. And Dortmund's at home. They can clinch the title. They can win in front of a home crowd. How are we feeling?
Overly confident. I think, especially because Jude should be back at the weekend, and I think that's really all they need. More than anything, I want to see them do this for Marco Reus.
I need that trophy left for Marco.
I'm pretty sure he's never done it, So seeing him and him just choosing to be the guy that stayed at Dortmund through it all as every single decent player around him left, to see him finally do it will be awesome. So I'm confident. I think Dortmund has everything in him to get it done.
You couldn't ask for a better game to end your season on. Now, Mainz are in ninth. They're coming off of four losses in a row. They're playing like shit. So they're not playing well whatsoever. I think that this could be the year, like we've said. I'd love for Royce, just like you said. But what a story in Sebastian Haller as well, to come off of cancer, to go through chemo.
Brace at the weekend, too.
Brace at the weekend to lift them into this pole position. I think I look all over that team, you know, Julian Brandt, who we laugh at like every week of like what he could be if he was like even an ounce consistent. But that man's in the team of the season for the Bundesliga. He's put in some incredible performances. I like everyone on that team. I want them to do it so badly.
Royce is up there with like Totti, like Francesco Totti went at Roma. Like,
yeah, dude.
That like single club legend shit. Like, I need that trophy
loyalty,
lift.
Man.
I need that trophy lift so bad. So bad.
Inject it, bro. Inject it. Now, Butchie, you want to take us home with a factor cat? Yeah, bro.
Bro, are you sleeping, dude?
Yeah, dude, what the hell, bro?
I'm awake. What? I'm awake.
Jesus.
What was the question?
No, we're going to wait another 15 minutes before we ask you again.
You let us know when you're ready.
I mean, Haaland broke the goal record. I think, what is he at, 36 right now? Harry Kane's at like 28. And man, I'll tell you what, if he wasn't on Tottenham, I would be so pissed for him that he scored 28 goals in the season and didn't win the Golden Boot. But fuck Spurs. Fuck Harry Kane. Erling Haaland.
Yeah, way to start it with Winks.
Yeah. Knock that one out.
Love you, Hoove. Love you, Hoove. No, but like the main comparison you can make, and if City win the Champions League, then it's absolutely no contest. But the only argument I really see here is that Kane doesn't have a whole lot around him. Sonny's underperforming this season. He doesn't have a whole lot around him helping him produce. So the fact that he scored 28 goals with the other 10 guys on the field that he has with him is impressive in itself. And then you look at Haaland scoring 36 with, you know, a lot of the best players in the world in their respective positions. He should have that many for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can look at the players that you have around you on the field and who's able to feed you balls and send crosses in, but you still have to put them in the net. And the fact that he's done it 36 times and might win a Champions League and might win it and won a Premier League and might win a treble is Haaland for me.
Yeah, I think at least me moving into it as well, I think there's two different ways to look at it. For me, there's a more impressive season and a better season.
Yeah.
The way that he verbalized it was a better season. Like, factually wise, like, Haaland had a better season. I think the more impressive season for me is Kane because of what he has around him. At times, Tottenham are 100% laughable. Like, just a joke at times. And so for me, I think it's a two-way street in which way you want to verbalize that word, right? What adjective you want to use towards them. So for me, it's still Haaland based on the way the question's asked.
I think, yeah, based on the way the question's asked, you really can't Haaland. I think you guys have sort of all hit the key points with Kane, that nobody can tell me that if Harry Kane wasn't in this same exact City team, that he wouldn't have the same amount of goals, if not more.
Right.
And I think that's, I 100% wholeheartedly like agree with that. Especially just sort of the fact that, like, people will continue to say, and obviously they haven't won two more trophies, but people are already saying that this is Pep's best City team he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say a lot of that maybe has to do with Haaland, but then again, I think a lot of it doesn't, because so many of the goals that he scored this year are tap-ins and pens, and yes, you still have to score, but Harry Kane's doing this with sort of like the junkyard dogs every single week, with like guys, random guys playing in the midfield, changes, all this different stuff, and he still continues to score goals. So I think Jakey hit the nail on the head. Like, overall better season, it has to be Haaland, but like, I think you can't sort of discount what Harry Kane has done to score 28 goals this year in a Spurs team that we have seen be their hooves emotions be so fucking rocky.
Just be so bad. Dude, I don't know. Like, I'm a big fan of like players being complete players and guys that can do it on both sides of the ball, that can pass, they can score, they can do all of that. And Harry Kane is more complete to me than Erling Haaland is. But I think, I don't know, if City go on to do it and do it in the treble, I think that it's just, it's so hard to say anyone other than Haaland. He's come in and done such an amazing job. I get it. Like, I'm a big fan of the full player of Kane, but I think it's Erling Haaland. I think that he's had the
taken
better season.
Like everything in me not to just go off on City right now, but I'm going to save it for the end of the season review.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that it might be a product of some of the other guys that are around him, but that man just gets himself in the right position all the time. And then also, not saying that this is like, you know, anything against Harry Kane, because I don't have anything bad to say about him, but like Haaland is a fucking winner, man. Like you listen to him in his like post game conferences. He's always looking at what's the next goal, what's the next whatever. Like he's so professional at 22. Like the way he handles himself, we've said it for a long time, he's only getting better. But I don't know, man. To look at a 22-year-old first year in the league, he is fucking electric. And Harry Kane, obviously, he's not 22, but this is his best ever season, and it's getting outshined by a 22-year-old kid. I don't know.
Haaland ain't scoring 28 at Spurs.
Fuck, definitely not. Fuck, no. Definitely not. But like, it's like things that we'll never know, bro. Like we'll never know, and so that is the situation that he's in right now, and he's handling it well.
All right, so here's where I come
from. Hold my beer. Hold my beer.
So,
hey, this might be the last time you can defend your boy as a top player.
So. That's true.
I'm hip. I'm all too hip. It's terrible. But I think Harry Kane, in his own goofy English way, is also Mamba mentality. Like very, very number one professional. Has always been the same type of professional outwardly to the media. And I think he may not show it as much. He definitely is like killer take all, like no holds off, like just a serious, serious professional, treats himself really well, like dietary plans, works out, whatever you want to fucking talk about. But Haaland is that as well. So I'm not discrediting that. But you guys hit it for the most part. I would like to watch all of both of their goal involvements back to back. In just one sit down, and I would look at
you. Do that, man.
I would.
You go for it.
And it's gonna be, you know, you know what you're gonna get. You know what you're gonna watch when you see Harry Kane's goal involvements of the year. I think 38 or 40 something of them. And you know what Erling Haaland's are gonna be too. We're picking apples and oranges here because one guy scored 36 goals. No way you can avoid it. The things that Harry Kane does every single week are genuinely more impressive to me, and just more football oriented. And I do think he is still the better player. But guy scored a shit ton of goals, is what it is. Golden boot. I'm pissed he's not going to get it either, but it's not like fucking anybody deserves it on Spurs. So it's a damn shame for him, but he's better than Erling Haaland. So
Haaland's also just a bad guy. You know, I don't know if you guys saw it, throwing out F-bombs on national television.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus.
Not that I looked this up or anything, but Wayne Rooney did the same thing in 2011. Suspended for three games. So Haaland should probably be suspended for the FA Cup final.
Very true.
They're both so likable. Hey. Erling Haaland's so likable, bro.
Good God.
So likable.
That's what's so annoying. He's the most likable Targaryen of them all.
My favorite video ever is him in his full Borussia Dortmund tracksuit from training after the last win in the club, making drinks for other people, like dapping guys. I eat it up. He's amazing.
Him and Grealish are great together.
So fun.
Yeah.
So at this time next week, fellas, we'll be finished with the Premier League season. We'll be able to do some recaps, and that'll be a wrap for the Prem season. So congratulations on another episode, fellas. To all of our listeners out there, we have some big episodes coming. We have our Premier League recaps where we're going to deep dive into each one of our seasons individually. We're going to go through our player of the season. We're going to go through things like that. And in addition to that, we have Josh Yarrow coming onto the podcast recording this week. And we'll get that to you all as soon as we can, coming from St. Louis City. You know, the first signing to our St. Louis City 2 team, captain of St. Louis City 2 over the last year, number 2 overall draft back in 2016, big time player, and we're excited to have a conversation with him coming up this week. So we'll get that to you all as quickly as possible, and cheers, fellas. Great episode.
All done, lads.
Cheers, boys.